That was their home opener. They got some experience under their belt. Expect them to be better on all sides.
A lot of built up anticipation and waiting. I was excited and happy and grateful to be on the field.
They come in younger each year, but I still run with them, so it's all good. They just say I'm old most of the time.
We didn't want to get the fans excited about it, but we finally got confirmation last week that it would be back for the entire season.
Welcome to the Monarch Asylum Episode 2. My name is David Agudelo. I'm driving this ship all year long, a brand new podcast for 2015, focusing on all things Old Dominion football and some basketball when that gets started, but right now it's all about the pigskin. The voices you heard at the top of the show are today's guests in order: Andy Mashaw, ODU color analyst for the radio broadcast. Couple players, very excited to have our first player interviews on the podcast this year. Blair Roberts, senior wide receiver, and we can't ignore the defense. They had a great day on the first win. Falante Mischer, senior safety, is going to be one of our guests. And the last voice you heard was Jason Chandler, associate athletic director for marketing, and he's talking about what fans can expect this year from ODU and also a tradition that's coming back that a lot of fans are going to be happy about. First things first, I got to send a big thank you to everyone who listened to the premiere episode last week. We've got around 700 plays or downloads from around the world for that first episode. I mean, that shows me that people love some ODU football. There was a listener in Australia. We had one in Portugal, several in the UK. So it's really quite impressive how many people tuned into that premiere episode. So now it's time to follow it up with a better one. You can get all the information about the Monarch Asylum at monarchasylum.com, and you can follow us on Twitter at ODU Asylum. Once again, on Twitter at ODU Asylum, or you can just go to the website monarchasylum.com, and that'll have all the latest updates and where you can find the podcast. We also got to welcome our first sponsor this year. Going to try some new things. Our first sponsor is Lynn Haven Coffee Roasters. It's a small batch coffee roaster located at 2234 West Great Neck Road. That's near the intersection of Shore Drive. It's only open up on Saturday and Sundays from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. or by appointment, but it's owned and operated by one of the founders of the Shore Drive Farmers Market. Whether by the point or by the pound, great coffee has never been more convenient. You can visit them at lynnhavencoffee.com or email mike@lynnhavencoffee.com for more information. If you want a chance to win a $25 gift certificate to Lynn Haven Coffee Roasters, and it's some good coffee, you need to listen at the end of the show to learn how. Once again, a $25 gift certificate is going to go to someone. If you participate in the contest, I'm going to talk about it at the end of the show. Now let's talk about the game. What an amazing first win for the Old Dominion Monarchs. 38-34 up against at Eastern Michigan. You know, some of my thoughts on the game. You know, going into that game, I just could not believe how young this team was. The fourth youngest team in football. And even Bobby Wilder admitted before the game that this team reminds him a little bit of the 2009 version, the very first year of existence. Just such a very young team. I mean, 20 redshirt or true freshmen played in this game. When I looked at the game notes, all I see was a lot of first ever plays. First interception, first sack, first touchdown pass, first this, first that. It was really a historic day for a lot of players at Old Dominion. And the most important first they got was the first win. There were several things you got to look at. First of all, they just didn't turn the ball over. You know, if you want to win football games, you can't turn the ball over. And while they had a couple breaks, they played smart, safe football. Now, they did take advantage of some of the breaks. I mean, Eastern Michigan lost their starting quarterback, Reggie Bell. He was very efficient and was giving the defensive problems. But you got to win games like that. This is a game that you look back, if you lost, you would have been kicking yourself for letting it get away. And good teams don't let games like this get away from them. They find a way to win. They find a will to win. And that's what the Monarchs did. Now, they got a lot of help. We all know what Ray Lowry did. Leading the nation in rushing. It's pretty cool to say that. His 223 yards, he was just unbelievable that game. Showing, you know, and it's amazing when you expect someone to do something like that and they go out and do it. All eyes for the Eastern Michigan defense was on Ray Lowry, and he still got it done. That was an amazing showing. The balanced offense is really what sticks out in my head more than anything. 39 rushes as a team, 32 passes. that's what you can expect to see all year long. With the strength at running back from Jeremy Cox to Ray Lowry, you're going to see a lot of run and a lot of play action. And like I said, you have to love the resolve of this team. The last four games have been heart attack games. Wins in the last second. Now, the previous three were last year, and they were on last-second offensive plays. So it was nice to see a win, a last-second win, on a defensive play, because we know how much Old Dominion has struggled with defense over the last couple years. Well, let's get right to it. Let's get our first guest. I'm going to bring in Andy Mashaw. Andy Mashaw is the color analyst with Tad Alexander on 94.1 ESPN Radio, where you can hear their call of the games. And Andy does the color analyst. And Andy, how are you doing today?
Doing good, man.
Yeah, I just wanted to get your feedback, you know, with this offense and the defense from such a great performance on from both sides of the ball on the game last week. But, you know, going into that week, we didn't really know, expect what to see. And I know you mentioned that several times during your broadcast with Tad Alexander. You know, what are your initial takeaways from what you saw in the last game?
Well, for the offense, I think it looked pretty good. The main thing was get your red shirt quarterback back there. He didn't light it up per se. I mean, his numbers were good, but it wasn't anything to jump off the page at. The thing to jump off the page for me was the zero behind the turnover number. That was the big important thing, because you get a freshman quarterback in there, sometimes they get panicked, they make bad decisions that result in turnovers, interceptions, sometimes fumbles. He controlled the football. He kept the ball moving when he could, and he did not turn it over. That's the biggest thing.
18 of 32 for 184 yards. You're right, really pedestrian numbers. I know he got lucky on a couple balls that looked like a defender probably should have had him, but that's kind of the breaks of the game.
Yeah, and he had a couple that could have gone either way. The first one that was almost picked, they got overturned on replay. That probably one that should have been caught. Then there was a couple other ones that he overthrew Nick England at midfield on the game-winning drive, and England went up and made a play for his quarterback. So, you know, it evens out in the end. The most impressive thing, along with the no turnovers, was what Coach Walters said after the game. Everybody knows, you know, Laurie had such a great game, 223 yards or something. But half of those yards, or half, but a good chunk of those yards came from check down plays that Bentley turned from passes into runs. That's impressive. You got a redshirt quarterback in there, especially in the red zone. He knows he's got a chance to get a touchdown pass. He's going to throw it into the end zone. He's got a chance to put up numbers and points. But instead, he looks and sees a run soft defense and makes a check and hands it off. Instead of trying to get some of the glory, he turns and hands it off to his running back. That's impressive.
And he did that a couple times, from what I understand, on like third and nine, like third and long, when you know, when the initial urge of quarterback is like, I got to make the throw on this.
Yeah, everybody thinks it's got to be a pass down. It's third and long. We got to throw it. He looks and sees a soft middle, something they can exploit. And he says, well, we're going to take what they give me. And he just does it, and it works.
It looked early on to me, though. I've heard about what a great play-action quarterback Shuler is. And it looks like, from what I remember, two or three of his first four or five throws are off play action. It looks like they were trying to work him into the game with some comfortable throws, something that maybe some of his favorite plays.
Yeah, they want to keep things as comfortable for them as possible. They want to call plays that he is comfortable running. It may not even be the best play in a certain scenario, but if he's comfortable running it, that's going to be a better result than trying to force something that may be right for the scenario, but isn't right for Bentley, and it could turn into something bad. But he did a pretty good job with that. The play fakes are part of that, because everybody's going to be looking at Lowry coming in. Everybody's going to say, well, Lowry's a freshman running back of a year in the conference last year. Everybody knows he's going to be the key to this offense. They are going to key on him. So if you can get him biting on a couple play fakes earlier, that's just going to open things up for you. So, yeah, he did a pretty good job with that. He took a few hits in there, too, which is something you're concerned with, because all through fall camp, he's got a red jersey on. Nobody's hitting him until he gets in that first game. He takes a couple of shots. He gets back up. You know, he's still okay. He's ready to go.
It looked like to me there was a little bit of a turning point, too, when ODU's offense was struggling, and then they threw a five wide out there, and it forced Eastern Michigan to call a timeout. And it seemed, I guess they weren't expecting that, because I don't know how you go against the ODU team and not expect a five wide at some point, but it looks like that caught them off guard. And it seemed like after that, then they opened up the offense a little bit, and I think Shuler got a little more comfortable, and then we all know what Ray did in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you throw a team off balance, you're going to get open up holes for them. I mean, and Ray was having an outstanding game. So at that point, you got to crack down. You got to focus, guys, bring safeties in, bring linebackers in closer to the middle where you're getting gashed. And then they come out with a five wide look, and you guys are looking at the sideline and they'll go, okay, what do we do now? So yeah, that will throw a wrinkle into things. The main thing they did for Ray Lowry, Coach Barber talked about it, the second half, they adjusted the way they were blocking the backside of those zone read plays, those rushes. So they cut down, but they run to the right. They adjusted what the tackle and the guard did on the left side to cut down the backside of those plays, and that opened up all kinds of room for Ray, who went for 150-plus yards in the second half. I mean, he didn't have a bad first half. He was up over 70 yards in the first half, but the second half, they really opened the door, made a couple of adjustments.
Let's talk a little bit about Ray. Last week, I had Taylor Heinicke on the first episode. He called him a little bowling ball, that once he gets going, he's hard to stop. What I find interesting, too, is he's got these short, choppy little steps when he runs, and I keep expecting someone to catch him, but he always pulls away from him. He's got this deceptive speed.
Exactly, and deceptive is the perfect word for it. He's got huge, thick, powerful legs. He only lost yardage one play all week last week. Everything else was moving forward. He had a lot of yards after first contact. But you think he's a powerful guy, and once you get him in the open, you should be able to track him down. But he has got such good flat line speed when he gets into the open. He breaks through that first line, and he can outrun safety. If you don't take a right angle on him, he's going to outrun you to the end zone, which he did do a couple of times last week.
28 carries, 223 yards, 8 yards per touch, 54 long, and, of course, all those are career highs. And the 4 touchdown ties a career high. He's leading the nation in rushing as of right now.
Yeah, but he didn't have any catches, so, you know.
But is that part of the offense? Is that because I know you're making a joke, but it looks like they do spread the ball around a lot. How is he out of the backfield catching the ball?
Oh, you can't play the running back in this system unless you can catch out of the backfield, because they are as much a receiving core as the receivers are in this offense. Now, especially with the quarterbacks in this system are trained to always move the chains. If that means you got to check down, then you check down. You take whatever the defense gives you to keep the ball moving forward. They'll never turn it over, they'll never go backwards. So, yeah, they will catch a lot of balls underneath. And Billy's not afraid to check down either. I've seen him in practice. Sometimes he checks down a little too quick because he doesn't want to make the mistake, doesn't want to make a high-risk throw. So he definitely is able to come out of the backfield and make catches. Now, he's not as effective after the catch, because he's going to turn around and go with it as he is when he gets ahead of steam built up. But, yeah, he's got some decent hands out of the backfield, too.
Jeremy Cox also got some touches out of the backfield. As a total, they ran the ball 35 times. Is that about what we can expect, 35 to 40 times on this offense? Like, it's really going to be 50-50 from the pass and the run?
They were planning on doing that. They were planning on having a more run-heavy attack this year. Again, you get a freshman quarterback back there. And you've got Tafatua, rookie of the year from last year as your running back. So they were expecting to be a little more rush heavy. I was kind of surprised they threw it as much as they did last week. But I expect to see that kind of balance in there, probably week in and week out, especially when you get a guy like Jeremy Cox behind Lowry, who's almost a clump. And Cox is 5'11", 207. Wiley Lowry is 5'10", 201. Then they got the same kind of power style. You don't really lose a whole lot with Cox. Maybe a little bit of speed in the open field. But Cox, he ain't going to hurt you when he's in there, that's for sure.
Let's look at some of the receivers. 9 total catches across the board for 9 total different players had catches. What kind of struck me initially is David Washington, only 1 for 14, but he looks like he's the red zone target. Of course, with his extra size, you know, the touchdown of the corner, and I know they tried the same kind of play later in the game that didn't work out. But he's the big red zone target, it looks like to me.
Yeah, well, he's 6'3", and he can jump. I mean, he can jump. We'll put it that way. He can go up and high point the ball. I didn't get it. He's got great hands out there. That one touchdown that he came down on, he kind of tweaked his ankle a little bit, and he was trying to work that out. In fact, he was staying out there through most of the halftime out on the field running back and forth in front of Marty Bradley, trying to assure him that he's ready to go back in there. But, yeah, he is going to be a red zone target at that height at 6'3", and his ability to go up and get it. I mean, that ball that he caught in the end zone was kind of on a line drive, and he was covered. It was pretty good coverage. I mean, Daquan Pace had him right in his jersey. Just Washington had a better angle on it and went up and got it. He just jumped right over him.
this group, receiver group too, it seems to me that there's not one guy that screams out, you know, that's going to be the focal point of a coverage. It's just got a lot of really good receivers, but no one that's going to blow your socks off.
Yeah, and they can spread you out so much. They can cover the field with so many guys that it's hard for a defense to figure out who to match up against. The one thing that they are still looking for, I think, is a deep threat. Washington is sort of a deep threat in that he can go up and jump over guys, but he doesn't have the breakaway speed to outrun the fastest corner on another team. They're still kind of looking for that guy, but I mean, you got size on the outside. Washington is 6'3". Pascal is 6'2". He's more of an inside guy. Roberts, who came back, had a pretty good game back for his first game in a couple of years. He's at 6'2". So they got guys that can out-jump you on the outside, but they still need that deep, deep threat. I think they're trying to find that.
Who is the fastest receiver? Because usually, of course, deep threats usually you equate with speed.
It's pretty close. I mean, Little is pretty fast. Marquise Little, probably the fastest guy on the team in a straight line, is Vincent Lowe. And they've been trying to find ways to get him the ball in the last couple of years, and he just hasn't found the right way to get it to him yet. They're all pretty close. I mean, nobody on this unit is slow, but they don't have the super fast breakout guy like they had with Antonio Vaughn in previous seasons. But there's enough guys in there that they can spread it around, like we said earlier, makes it difficult for anybody to focus on one guy.
And Nick England, I think England looks to me kind of like a little bit of a security blanket. I don't know. It looks like Schuler. I don't know if Schuler trusts him maybe just more than another receiver, but it seemed like he was looking for him on some of the key throws.
Well, if he didn't trust him before, he does now. Because that catch he made on that game-winning drive, that made it save the game. That ball, because it was a play to roll out for Bentley, who got pressure and had to roll out of the pocket and threw it on the run. And that ball was, they had probably 8 feet, 7.5 feet in the air, and England went up and got it. It was a tough catch, but he probably saved that game for him on that catch alone. And he had a pretty good game yesterday. I think as a unit, the receivers were probably grading themselves at about an average grade for that game overall. They had some drops. They had some catches that weren't as clean as they could have been. But when they had to have the catches, the clutch ones, they made them.
Let's switch over to the defensive side of the ball. Once again, I feel like repeat yourself on the offense. We weren't sure exactly what we would see. I think we had a good idea that the defense was going to be better. But it looks like they got hit in the mouth early, of course, you know, down 14 points twice. What did you see them from that whole game and how they adjusted?
I think they did exactly what the coaching staff probably expected them to do. I mean, going in, we had no idea what we were going to see. But had you told me the final score and the way that game was going to go, I probably would not have been shocked. Because I said in the pregame with Ted, I said, the only thing we know is that mistakes are going to happen. When you got all this many freshmen and redshirt freshmen, there are 6 redshirt freshmen and 2 true freshmen that all got playing time on the defensive line. That many young guys out there, let little amount of experience, somebody's going to make a mistake. Somebody's going to get too far upfield and get trapped outside and give up a big run. Somebody's going to blow a coverage and give up a big pass. The question was how you were going to come back from that. And I think they made adjustments at halftime, and they were able to weather the storm. Now, obviously, there's a lot of room to work. When you give up 34 points like that, there's room to be worked on. But most of the time, the biggest improvement teams see is between week 1 and week 2. It's because you learn from mistakes. You don't know what those mistakes are until you make it. Now you've seen your mistakes. You know what you have to work on. You know when you have to stay at home. You know when you have to fire up field. So I think they're going to look at these things on tape, and they're going to be a lot improved next week.
Yeah, and they do have the youth, and they have athletic youth. But I've always said I feel that if you have a young defense and I could only have 1 or 2 veterans, I'm going to want one at safety. I'm going to want one at linebacker, and that's what they have. Felonte Mischer with 3 pass breakups. I mean, his veteran experience has got to be huge for this defense back there.
All right, Felonte Mischer is hands down probably the player of the game on defense. Now, P.J. Ricks led him in tackles, I think, but he made the biggest plays and obviously the most impact plays. He saved a touchdown at the end of near the end of that game. Ball got overthrown over everybody's head, and he got back on it and tipped it away right at the goal line to stop it. Along with a few bone-crushing smack hits that broke up passes. And those are the guys that you need, like you just said. You want a guy at safety, and you want a guy at linebacker that you know you can count on to make calls and to get guys up. Mishner has been the leader of this secondary all preseason, all camp long. He's the guy that's out there talking to his guys, telling them, you made a mistake here. This is where we need to be. This is where we need to shift. And he's also talking to the receivers the whole practice, too. And whether they're on, you know, skeleton drills or one-on-one, they're always going back and forth. But he has been the leader of that secondary unit out there. And there were some other guys, some young guys that came up. I thought Brandon Anderson, freshman redshirt, freshman corner, had a pretty good game himself. Malik Johnson played out of his shoes for most of that game. He had some bone-crushing shots that he had that he forced a fumble that led to a big play. So they get some bright spots on that defense, and they just get beat by plays that are designed to beat inexperience. They got beat by, you know, the throwback screens. They got beat by the misdirections, the read option type plays. Plays that are going to beat freshmen. So I think once they see those things on tape, they're going to get better.
No, and, you know, the misdirection, I think we kind of all kind of expect that. Whenever you, like you said, when you play a young defense or a super aggressive defense, you always have to drop those in. And that's really what set up, I think, two or three of the first touchdowns that Eastern Michigan have. And it seemed like in the second half, they, you know, of course, losing the quarterback, Bell really changed the situation when the scrambling issue wasn't there. Definitely, you know, that was another break ODU defense got. You didn't have to worry about the scrambling quarterback anymore.
Yeah, well, that definitely changed the whole game. But what that did was it made them play more of a straight-up game. And when you had to play a straight-up game, these guys can get after it. These pass rushers don't have to worry about play fakes. They don't have to worry about containment and keeping Bell from breaking a big run. They can just pin their ears back and go. And then you saw what happened when they did it. Ox got a big sack from behind. Ward got the big interception at the end of the game. Because they were making plays. They didn't have to stop and worry about it. Am I going to bite on a fake? Am I going to get run around? So that's the kind of thing that they can do, but they also are always going to have to be aware for those play fakes, those throwback screens, you know, the read option plays. You said players that are designed to be an over-aggressive defense and a young defense. That's exactly what these guys are. They are both of those things. They are young and they are very aggressive.
Tim Ward, I mean, we know that he was 6'6". I mean, and from everything I hear, extremely athletic. I love it when you hear stories about a player that they're thinking about redshirting, but then the player says, with his play on the field, and in practice, says, no, coach, I'm just not going to let that happen. And he's just really stepped up, and what a play for him to have the, you know, ODU's used to the, last year we got used to the last second field goals and offense to win it. Well, what kind of step of it for this program to have a guy like that make a last-second play on defense to win it? I mean, that's really – it's kind of changing the script a little bit.
And that wasn't a freshman play that he made either. They switched their defense up. They went to a three-down lineman set and put him in a stack right behind the nose guard. So he played right behind him. And usually when they put him there, he's kind of as a spy, or he can pick a hole, read the blocks, and figure out which direction he wants to go. He stood back and watched throwback to see where he was going to go, what he was going to do. He rushed straight in. Throwback got a little pressure, I think it was from Coward, and he rolled out to the outside, and then Ward made his move. He raced to where Throwback was going, not where he was. He beat him to the punch. He beat him to the spot where he had to make a throw and was waiting for him when he tried to throw that. And you try to throw a ball over a 6'6" guy, he jumps up with both hands. That's what happened. He chips it, and then he stayed with it, was athletic enough to make the interception and steal it.
I think that was the most impressive thing, because to keep your head about you when that's ball tipped, you know, luckily he tipped it straight up, so that made it a little bit easier. But overall, looking at this game, I see 8 redshirt freshmen, they said, started on played on defense, 5 on offense. And you're right, there were some young mistakes. We saw a couple penalties that shouldn't happen. But what do you expect from this offense going forward? What can fans expect to see?
Well, I expect to see Bentley get better. He will get more accurate probably with some of his throws. If he gets a little more calm and gets his footing underneath him, once he sees another game, it will help him a lot. Once he gets up to real game speed, that'll help him get better. But I think the decisions he's making were outstanding in game one. I mean, it's hard to expect him to get better decision-making as he goes on, but I guess he will do that too, just with more experience. But the freshman level guy to come back there and make the decisions, to make the checkdowns, to runs, to make the reads that he made, it was impressive. I expect him to get better. And this offensive line, people were wondering, you know, because they started out slow, is this offensive line really that good? We got all these returners, what's going to happen? They don't look so good in the first quarter, but they made one adjustment at halftime, and you got a running back that goes for 223 yards. You don't do that without an outstanding offensive line. Well, those guys are there. They are solid. They're going to get their mistakes, a couple of mistakes made with a few bad snaps. That can be worked out in practice, too. So everybody, I think, has room to get better, but it's a pretty solid performance to start off with.
And Satchel Ziffer, I have to throw in, I just wanted to say Satchel Ziffer, first of all. But what a job by him. I mean, averaging, I think it was like over 50 yards a punt and a couple just, you know, great. It really helped on field position.
Yeah, both punters did a pretty good job in there. Servai hit a couple of good ones, too. Ziffer, when he came in the situations they wanted him in that rugby-style punt, he kept it away from the return, man. That was the biggest thing. They don't care so much about the total yards. You keep it away from the return guy and don't let him get anything extra out of it, which he did. And they won the punting battle. And punter for Eastern Michigan was a great punter. That guy knows how to kick the ball. Austin Barnes, he pinned him back in the game last year inside the 3-yard line 3 times. And he was a pretty good punter. But this game, they kept him pretty even going back and forth with it. Ziffer did a pretty good job on it. Servai had a couple of good kicks in there. Thing they got to work on with special teams the most, though, they got to get those kickoffs. They got to get those kickoffs deeper, because that's the hidden yardage that they gave up. Too many times, Eastern Michigan started outside of their own 30-yard line to start drives, and they got to get those kickoffs a little deeper.
So, what Norfolk State? What do you think they should? I mean, is that going to be a close one, or is that one they should be able to handle pretty well for the home opener?
You would think it's one that they should handle pretty well, but you can never, ever say, you know, for sure that anybody's going to do anything, because who knows what can happen. Now, if they're a home opener, they got some experience under their belt. I expect them to be better on all sides, but especially on defense between week one and week two. Then again, the last time they played Norfolk State, it took them right down to the wire. They had to win it on a game-winning field goal on the last play of the game. So you never know. Those guys are going to be amped up, too. This is going to be close to their home. They're going to be way down the road, and they're going to be thinking, you know, ODU gets all the respect. They get all the publicity. We're going to show them we can play, too. And it could go either way. I mean, you think on paper it looks like it should be a win for Old Dominion. Hope that it's a win for Old Dominion. But the second you don't give anybody some respect, they can come up and bite you. We saw that 2 years ago.
Well, the one thing I know for sure, Foreman Field will be rocking. That's all I know. All right, almost wrapping up here with Andy Mashaw, ODU color analyst. I just got to ask you one more question. Why aren't you on Twitter? It's 2015. Yeah, it's the information age. I mean, I'm doing my research, and I get Ted's, and I get Doug Ripley's, and I follow Harry Minium, and I'm looking every time I see a picture of you on Twitter. There's no location. It's just an Andy Twitter. I think Ted called you Twitterless Mashaw from a tweet on Saturday.
Yeah, the handle No Tweet Andy. I think it was going to start catching ground. It'll be trending before I even get on there. That's probably going to have to change soon. I'm going to be strong-armed into doing that.
Well, it will definitely, you know what, we need it out there because there's a lot of good information. I love it. It's the information age. To be honest, whenever I find it, we need information now, I don't even search Google. I search Twitter. I find it's much more current. I find something, you know, sometimes I search something on Google and I get an article from 4 years ago. No, I need something. I want something recently. But, hey, listen, we'd love to get you on there. Definitely get a good Twitter handle, get something that's easy to type and easy to tweet, and we'll definitely see you. I think, I don't know, you got to do it. I'm going to be one of the ones to try and strong-arm you on this.
Well, I think Ted and Doug and our engineer James, they're going to handle that.
All right, well, Andy, thank you very much for your time. Once again, Andy Mashaw, color analyst for ODU football. You listen to the games, I believe, on 94.1 ESPN in the Norfolk area, and Andy and Ted do a great job on the call. A lot of times, I do have to work on a ODU game day. I'll be shooting a Hurricanes game, and I have my headphones on. People are like, what are you listening to? I'm like, I'm listening to the ODU game. So that's how I have to listen. When I can't watch a game, I'm definitely listening to you guys.
We appreciate it. Thank you very much, Dave.
All right, man. Have a good one. We'll see you next time. We'll bring you on maybe in a couple future episodes to do this again. It was fun.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, man.
All right, let's keep the chains moving, like Bobby Wilder always says, as I welcome in to the Monarch Asylum, the first active player interview here on our second episode. I want to welcome Blair Roberts, redshirt senior wide receiver. Blair, how are you doing today?
Doing pretty good. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Blair, career 108 career receptions, of course, coming back from that back injury, one of the most veteran players on this team. Blair, I do have to ask you a little bit about last year. What was it like for you sitting out last year with that back injury?
It was pretty tough. Just knowing you couldn't be out there to help your teammates contribute. But it was just a lot of anxiety built up. For the most part, I just had to have a lot of patience just to, persevere through the injury and get back.
How was it going through that rehab? Because I know, I've had back issues before, too, being a cameraman. And I know that you want to move, but you just sometimes physically can't. How difficult was it?
It was very difficult. Sometimes you didn't want to get up just because you were pretty sore the next day from rehabbing or things of that nature, just not wanting to get up and do things. But you got to just push through it and persevere and get through it.
Well, you definitely did that. Now, you got to take me back to last week. You're in Eastern Michigan. You're in the huddle with your teammates. They're about to announce Old Dominion to run on the field. What were your emotions like, especially after the year you had last year?
Just extreme excitement. I haven't been on the field for a whole year, so it's a lot of built-up anticipation and waiting. I was just excited and happy and grateful to be on the field.
Did you learn?
All thanks to God.
Did you learn anything about yourself last year, having to sit out and go through what you went through?
Oh, most definitely. Just looking at the game from a different angle, being out for a whole year, you learn certain things. And looking at other players like Antonio Vaughn, just learning leader capabilities from him, just looking at things like that from the sideline.
Fast forward to this year, what do you think, what are your strengths as a wide receiver? What do you think you do well?
Well, obviously catching, communicating with my teammates well. And I think being a big playmaker is one thing that I'm pretty good at. Just got to get some opportunities to do that.
So you think you got good hands, maybe the best hands on the team?
Up there, yeah.
Two catches for 19 yards in that first game, but no receiver had more than three catches. It looks like this offense is going to really spread the ball around to all the receivers. What do you like about this wide receiver group? Because to me, it looks like you don't have that one superstar stud, but you've got a lot of really good receivers.
Yeah, very versatile. Everybody got different capabilities that they bring to the table in order to help us win. I think just in general, we all just want to make plays and just get the job done. So there's just going to be a lot of opportunities for them to make plays and just show that we can do it.
Which one of the young guys impresses you the most?
I would have to say Marquise Little. He's pretty good. He turned himself into a veteran just by making plays, not doing too much talking, and just leading by example.
Everyone knew that going into this year that the offense was going to change. You were part of some high-flying offenses when Taylor Heinicke was under center. When did you first notice how different the offense was going to be?
Going into camp, just from the playbook, it was just totally different. Did a lot of tight end set where there was a lot of, just working the tight end into the equation, as in previous years, we didn't do that too much. So that was a lot different. So and from the standpoint of just learning new plays, the whole playbook changed just numerously. So we had to pick that up, and I think that was a lot different.
Did that take some getting used to? Because I know for the fans, it's probably going to take a little getting used to.
Oh, most definitely. They probably used to the high-speed offense, no huddle, just moving the ball real quickly, not having too many stops and things of that nature.
I do got to ask you about Ray Lowry. What do you think about his performance? It's one thing when a guy goes into a game and everyone's expecting him to do it, and then he did it.
Yeah, it was a phenomenal effort by him. I think more importantly, I think the receivers as a whole, we got to step up to the plate and take some of the weight off his shoulders. We can't, put it all on him to score four touchdowns a game and win us every game.
Let's talk a little bit more about that. Of course, you have the new quarterback with Shuler Bentley under center. I understand his strengths is a little bit more the play action, and he does have a nice strong arm. What have you seen from Shuler when we knew it was going to be his team from the get-go, and how has he taken that role, and what have you seen from him?
Yeah, he's taking it on pretty well. I think he got a lot of leadership capabilities, and also his confidence is pretty high just from, when he started the game, just completing that first pass is very important for us, for any quarterback, I believe. So you know, with him doing that, I think that helped his confidence out a lot. And, you know, from there, he worked throughout the game and just made plays where we needed him to make plays.
And what was his demeanor like in the huddle? I mean, for, you know, his freshman first game, he hasn't really played in a competitive game in 2 years. Take me inside the huddle up in Eastern Michigan. What was he like?
Excitement. He was doing a lot of talking, just delivering the plays to us. And he was real focused, and attentive to what we had to do. And I think he was ready and excited to play, just as I was.
Now, a lot of eyes in early in camp were on the defense. All I've heard about how much better it was, and they made the game-winning play last week in Eastern Michigan. What have you seen from this defense? How better is it?
I think most importantly, they connected as one. They have that ability to put all their egos aside and just play for each other. That's most important. So when things happen, things go wrong, you know, they have the ability to come together and just push through and be one. And I think Vellante Mitchell, he's a big part of that.
Yeah, it seems to me like he's the glue that kind of pulls that defense together, and that he's a talker too, evidently. I mean, he communicates well with that team.
Mm-hmm, most definitely.
Do you see that out there when he's out there? You see him as that quarterback of that defense?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. He's like a point guard out there. He's orchestrating, talking to his teammates, getting them riled up. This is his personality and demeanor fit well with that defense, and it took a little while for them to get it right. But it's definitely bond. It's a great bond now.
Back over to the offense. What do you think the potential of this offense is? Because it looks like it's going to be kind of a, you know, more so in the past, a 50% run, 50% pass. You know, a little bit more of a balanced offense than ODU fans are used to seeing.
Yeah, most definitely a little bit more balanced. And just incorporating the run, because we do have two or three great running backs. So I think that's going to help us out a lot, too, with play-action passes and things of that nature.
Yeah, who's going to be that play-action deep threat? Because I see when you can run the ball like you can with Ray and the other running backs, that play-action deep ball is going to be there. Who's the receiver that's going to go get it?
I think all of us can do that. So it's just not going to be one of us. It just depends on who's open at the time.
Depending on the matchup. All right, a couple more questions for you. You've got Blair Roberts, redshirt senior wide receiver, with us. I do want to talk to you a little bit about your good buddy Larry Pinkard. I know with what he did in Green Bay, unfortunately he's kind of fighting through an injury right now, but what did you think about what he did in Green Bay? He had a chance to do the Lambeau leap and really started turning some heads up there.
Most importantly, he just took advantage of his opportunity. The opportunity window was so slim, and I think for the most part, he did a great job of taking advantage of his opportunity, just putting himself out there so people could see him and just show his ability.
Are you still in touch with him? Because I know he's kind of fighting through a little bit of injury now, and you have a little experience from last year from fighting through an injury.
Yeah, we speak often, so it's a great relationship.
What about Taylor Heinicke? Just your reaction, your thoughts on, I mean, he made a football team, the only undrafted quarterback from this last year's draft to make an active roster. Does that surprise you? And what do you think about what he's done?
No, that doesn't surprise me at all. Taylor's a great player. He's very focused. He's smart. He gets into the playbook very early. And he communicates well. So I think all his attributes is going to fit well with the Vikings.
Last couple questions for you. I see that you're going to graduate with 2 degrees, criminal justice and human services.
Yeah.
What's the game plan if you can't continue with football after you graduate? What's the game plan? What do you want to do?
I'm still deciding. I haven't really made a decision on what career route I want to go down yet. So it's in the working. I'm just taking it day by day.
What do those 2 degrees mean to you and your family?
It's a great accomplishment. I think I'm honestly the first person out of my family to graduate. So my mom was very excited. And it's just a big accomplishment for myself. You know, being from where I'm from, a lot of people don't get a chance or opportunity to make it out. So, and with me doing that, I just think it just motivates a lot of people from around my area.
And you're from the Rochester area, New York, right?
Yeah.
And last question, did you know that you were around when the cannon was around, right? When the howitzer?
When who?
The howitzer was on the field, the big shotgun, the big cannon.
Oh, yeah. I was around.
Do you know what's coming back?
It is.
Yeah, it's coming back.
Oh, that's gonna be amazing. That's one aspect of the game. I think it helps the crowd get alive too at some point. When the cannon going off, it scares people, but it also excites them too. I think that's gonna help us a lot.
How loud is it?
It's extremely loud. It's louder than way louder than a gunshot, though.
All right, Blair Robertson, thank you very much for your time. Good luck this weekend against Norfolk State and the rest of this season, and then maybe we can get you on again sometime in the future.
Thank you. Appreciate the call.
All right, let's move to the other side of the ball where we have senior safety Felonte Mischer joining the program. Felonte, how are you doing today?
Hey, sir.
I'm doing good. How's preparations going for Norfolk State?
Good. We're out here working hard.
I got to ask you, I see everything I hear about this team, especially the defense, is how young it is and how youthful it is and how much talent there is. And then I look at you sitting back there and with all the experience that you have, do you feel like the old man on this team?
Exactly what I feel like. They kind of make me feel like that every day because they come in younger each year. But I still run with them, so it's all good.
They don't pick on, do they call you grandpa or anything like that?
They just say I'm old most of the time.
That's not a bad thing. Experience is a good thing. With that experience, how do you handle that experience with so many young guys on this team? Because, I mean, I look at the stats. I mean, you started all the games the last couple years. You've played in 36-plus games. How does that experience help you?
Well, it helps me a lot, like, outside of, like, on the field things, like learning and teaching the younger guys, like, things in the film, tendencies, how to pick them up and stuff like that. I teach them those things. So they come in real athletic, but, you know, not knowing, like, the little things of, like, studying film and stuff. And I help them with that a lot.
Are they receptive to that, or do they listen?
Yeah. For the most part, they do.
Safeties need to be vocal out there. I know that's a position that, you know, between middle linebacker and safeties, those guys do the most talking. Is that a role you feel comfortable in when you're out there playing? How so?
Yeah, I'm real vocal. Like, if I see a key or something I picked up on, I'll let the whole defense know. Or if there's a coverage check or anything, I'm making sure I let the whole defense know what's going on.
Looking back at the last game, ODU has been great. You've been on the field for the last four wins, last second plays to seal the game. What did it mean to you to have the defense make the last second play this time, not the offense, to seal a game?
It means a lot to me. It means a lot to all of us, actually, because of how there's a change in our team identity, and we need to take that initiative to be like the, you know, the I guess like the upstanding side of the ball to lead our team to victories. So it meant a lot to us to have that place outside of the ball.
You noticed that change, how the defense has improved, and that's everything I've heard. So how has the defense improved? Is this the best defense ODU has ever had?
I would think so. Our D-line has grown. Like guys like Rashad and Boomy, those guys who I watched as freshmen play, and I see the change they had, and like Terrell and Poncho came in as now like older guys now. Like our D line has gotten much better, which made the rest of the defense much better.
And physically, I hear physically they just look bigger and they fit the part of a D line. Can you see that?
Oh yeah. Even all the way down to our freshman O'Shane, he looks like a guy who's been playing all for 4 years.
What do you see in the younger guys? What's their mentality like when you're in that huddle with them and, you know, they're lining up and, you know, because it can be, I read that O'Shane said that he was surprised by the speed of the game after the first game. I mean, everyone can tell you about that, but until you're in the huddle, until you're playing that game, you know, the speed can sneak up on you.
Yeah, and I could tell that they were, like, getting used to that. Like, Tim and O'Shane, who never played in a college football game, I could tell that at the beginning, that they were, like, getting used to the speed of the game, and then, like, later on through the game, they kind of got used to it. I could see that in their demeanor.
What did you see more? Tell me a little bit more about Tim. I mean, everything I heard about him was they were thinking about redshirting him, but then how he performed in camp and throughout summer, that the coaches, he basically forced the coaches to start him, and then he comes up with, you know, the biggest play of the game and of his young career.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tim was a guy, like, when he came in, he was, like, playing D-lineman, but he was real skinny. And I guess that's why they thought they was going to redshirt him. But once they got him in camp and seen that he could, like, hold his own with the O-lineman, it was like, there was no reason to register him because they were registering him because of, they think he needed to get his strength up, but they see that he still have like some, I guess some inside man strength that he has that hold up against the O-line, so I think he's good.
And it doesn't hurt when you add 35 pounds on you from, I guess, summer to fall. That doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
What needs to improve, you think, from after the first game on this defense going forward?
Well, first of all, we need to start fast. Now that the freshmen got the first game jitters out, we can start fast. Stop those runs on first and second down from going for like 6 yards to like 3 yards. And that's mostly what I'm concerned with. Just like first and second down, we get like shorter yards on them. So that's for the most part. And just keep tackling good, like how we usually do.
Do you remember the howitzer cannon? Were you on?
Say it again?
Do you remember the cannon they used to have on the field? Because that was a couple years ago. You know what's coming back?
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's going to be back out there. They're going to fire it before and at halftime. What do you think about that?
That's awesome.
Yeah, they've been working hard to get it back, and it's definitely coming back.
Okay, I can't wait for that.
What's the stadium going to be like on this against Norfolk State? 42 consecutive sellouts. I mean, they've sold out every game in ODU history. What are you expecting, and what do you tell some of the young guys from what to expect on the game against Norfolk State?
I say expect a lot of excitement, our crowd to be into it. I expect our fans to be full and just be ready for a lot of excitement.
Okay, last couple questions. We got Felonte Mischer, senior safety quarterback, senior safety with us here. You keep an eye on Taylor Heinicke a little bit all. I know that some of you guys watch some of his preseason games and, you know, only undrafted quarterback to make an NFL roster. What do you think about what Taylor's been able to do?
I think that was great. Put our school on the map, like let the NFL know that we had guys coming out of here. I think he did a great job at doing that.
You know, he told me last week that coach sat with him before the season and said that the NFL might be a possibility for him, and that kind of changed his mindset, you know, going through the season. Now, some of the words I hear out there is now with Taylor kind of opening the door, you kind of looking at guys on this roster that, you know, maybe the NFL might be an opportunity for you. Is that something that's in the back of your mind as you play this season?
Yeah, that's in the back of my mind. But right now I'm focused on winning games for Old Dominion right now.
But how much does Taylor make in that roster show that, hey, you know what, at least someone's going to look at someone from ODU now maybe a little more serious than they have in the past?
Yeah. That was a good thing.
All right, Felonte. Well, thank you very much for the time. Have a good game against Norfolk State, and have a good season.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we're back in the Monarch Asylum. We have Jason Chandler, Associate Athletic Director for Marketing, joining me on the line right now. Jason, how are you doing today?
Hey, David. I'm doing great. I appreciate you having me.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for coming on. That was a heck of a first game, man. I imagine you have a nice win like that before a home game. You probably get a lot of people excited about this first game coming up against Norfolk State, the first home game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to come off a game like that, going into your home opener, we had so much commentary on social media and in the paper, and of course it was a close game, but we had, you know, an amazing performance by our preseason Conference USA running back who was the freshman of the year last year, and you know, he's now leading the FBS in rushing yards and TDs. So it definitely gives us a lot of chatter to work off of and get everybody excited about our home opener.
Well, I'm bringing you on today so we can talk a little bit about what fans can expect from their experiences this year, coming season, at Forman Field. And I know from what I've seen on Twitter that the howitzer cannon is back. Can you talk a little bit about that and how did that come about? I know it was gone for a couple years, but now it's back.
Yeah, we've gone back and forth, and everybody around here knows that the military is so important to the fabric of Hampton Roads and Old Dominion, with so many of our students being affiliated with the military. And so having that when we started the program, I think it was really something that caught on with our fans. You know, we were really sad that, unfortunately, with the circumstances, with some of the cutbacks with the military, that 2 years ago it went away. And ever since then, we've been trying to get it back. And at times we really thought it was going to come back, and you know, we didn't want to get the fans excited about it, but we finally got confirmation last week that it would be back for the entire season, and so we released that out. And man, the fans just were so excited about that. It's part of our game day tradition now, and we intend to keep it as long as we possibly can.
When is it fired, and what's like? Is it after a touchdown, or when? How do you use it?
We've decided, and some of this is due to how loud that cannon is that we only shoot it off when the team comes out of the tunnel for the introduction, when the team runs out for their intro, and then also when they come back to the second half. You know, one of the things is the rounds are expensive for a cannon like that, and being so loud with the neighborhood. And of course, Taylor Heinicke was putting up some touchdowns these last couple of years, so we didn't want to be shooting it off every 2 or 3 minutes like he could have been. So we're keeping it to just those two per game.
That's a good point. I didn't even think about that. You probably have to roll into a game with, you know, 40 or 50 rounds with that many, yeah, many touchdowns that they scored.
But it's a great signal for our fans. When they hear that cannon go off, okay, it's time. If I'm not in the stadium by now, I need to get back in the stadium. At halftime, if I hear that thing, hey, you know, I better get my concessions or wrap up my conversation and get back to the second half starting. So we think it's a great advantage that way.
Yeah, I guess you could hear it for miles around too, huh?
Yeah, it carries a little way. So I don't know exactly how far, but it shakes the stadium when it goes off.
Nice. Where is it located on the field? If fans want to see it, where is it at?
It's actually located in the north. I'm maybe our northeast corner, I believe. It's right beside our student section, right below our video board. We put it right there in the corner. It's manned by ROTC and a local chapter here of the Virginia National Guard. And they stand there and watch over the cannon and make sure nobody's going to run in front of it that doesn't know about it, like the opposing team. And then they do push-ups, too, when we score touchdowns. So it's just a great piece to have as part of our game.
Now, for the upcoming season specifically, I know you got a lot of different things planned. Old Dominion celebrating the 85th anniversary, and what a coincidence that Founders Day is the 12th, which is the Norfolk State game.
Yeah, I don't know that we could have planned that any better. And when we started planning out the 85th anniversary back in the spring, and we realized that our home opener was going to be actually on Founders Day, I mean, it was a no-brainer. We really had to make this game all about the university and its history. And so there's going to be a lot of nice touches that we put around that game. The football team's going to be wearing a sticker, a commemorative sticker on the back of their helmet. We're going to run out an 85th anniversary flag when the team comes on the field. Our foundation is actually going to do a nice giving campaign as part of the game. So it's just all built into that, and it's going to be a great day to celebrate ODU and the start of our football season.
And what about any other highlights for further down the season? I know you told me about that you have a color for each game. Is that the fans tend to wear a certain color T-shirt or color for each game? And is the game plan to do that again this year?
Yep, absolutely. That's one of the programs that, coming to ODU 3 years ago and knowing how young the program was, we had this thing called a style guide that they told me about. And sure enough, you know, I came that first game that I was going to work, and we had told everybody to wear whatever designated color it was, navy or white or gray, and the entire stadium was wearing it. And I understood right then that the fans were in tune with what we were asking them to do on game day. And so that style guide is their reference to what we want them to wear on game day, so it looks great in the stadium, on TV, everybody's uniform and supporting the team with that color. And for that first game, we're actually going to do a little bit of a throwback, a little heritage of the university to our throwback blue. It's a Columbia blue. It's now our accent color, but it used to be the official color of the university. And so we're going to ask everybody to wear that. It's the first game that we've asked everybody to wear that throwback blue color since we started the program.
And that's that lighter baby blue type color, just to, you know, so people know exactly what hue it is.
That's right, exactly.
What about Halloween? It's not often you get a game on Halloween. I know they actually, when I was doing a Dolphins game down here a couple years ago, they played on Halloween night. I actually dressed up as a zombie and shot the video. I shot the game in full zombie gear. I got some nice compliments from Larry Zonka and Dan Marino. It was actually quite entertaining. So what kind of special, I mean, what's going to be going on Halloween? Because there's a lot of different things you could do on a Halloween game.
Yeah, and we're still putting pieces together on that, but we're going to do a really nice marketing plan around the Halloween game. Because it's not every year you get that. And it happens to be against one of our better opponents in conference, against Western Kentucky. So we think that's going to be an important game. And we want fans to come out. And we understand that, you know, parents and kids and, you know, they want to do their trick-or-treating. So we're hoping they're going to come to the game and we can give them a little taste of that Halloween trick-or-treating atmosphere. We got our Kauffman Mall pregame tailgate area that we're going to do some special things. There's going to be some entertainment options and some arcade games, and we may have some of our other athletic teams out there doing a little, you know, goodwill, passing out candy and things like that. So I think it's going to be really fun. We'll do some costume contests in stadium with our students. So it'll be a lot of fun. Unfortunately, we don't know what time that game's going to kick off, so that's going to determine a lot of things. If it's a night game, we're going to do a lot of things for the students to try and get them there. If it's an earlier game, we got a great chance of getting the family and kids out if they still want to do trick-or-treating late in that the night. So hopefully they'll come to the game and then go back to their trick-or-treating a little bit later.
I know you guys sell out games pretty quickly, but you can still get tickets through. You said you have, like, some corporate-type tents that's available. How does that work?
Yep, we still got tickets available, and one of the new facets that we're offering this year that we think is going to be a real big hit, we're offering a corporate tent opportunity for groups. If you've got a group of 25 or more, that's the minimum. It comes with 25 tickets per tent. Or if you've got a corporation, if you're trying to do some hospitality for clients, or you want to have an employee stay and entertain your employees out of a football game, they're available for purchase game by game. So you don't have to buy them for the whole season. If you just want them for a particular game, it's $3,800. And with that, you get a ticket. You get an opportunity to actually tailgate inside the stadium. So that is unique under ODU. First time we've ever offered that. That you can actually go in, set up your tailgate. They'll have food prepared for you. You can have adult beverages, any kind of service that you like, TVs up in the tent. And you can actually be in the stadium pregame to take advantage of that and then also go back at halftime. And all you got to do is just walk out of the stands and walk right over to your tent. So it's a neat feature, something we never offered before, and it's been going very well for it.
Have you seen that? Have other universities implemented that? And is that where you kind of got the idea?
It was, yes. We've seen that at other universities. Again, with our ticket situation being sold out for every game, you know, we wanted to add a new element and hopefully build towards this new stadium that we're going to have, and we could have some of those amenities actually built into the stadium, and that instead of having to, you know, set up tents, it would actually be built in. But we've got to build that base of corporate entities that are going to be buying these tents. So we wanted to go ahead and get it started, so we carved out a block of tickets to actually put towards these tents, and so we're going to start that program now.
Last couple questions for you, Jason. Jason Chandler with me, Associate Athletic Director for Marketing. Parking. I know parking's always an issue. What's your recommendations for people when it comes to parking?
Yeah, you know, parking's just one of those things, and I think everybody deals with it, you know, at the bigger college football levels with the FBS, and we're no different. You know, it's important for fans because they want to get as close to the stadium as possible, but also be able to get in and out as quickly as possible. And we've got our own traffic issues from time to time in Hampton Roads, and a lot of it's dependent on what time the game is. But we just encourage people to, you know, check the website, check our information. We're constantly putting things out. Even last year when some of the tunnels were closed that were coming into the game that people used to get to campus, we were constantly putting out information, and of course, people have assigned seats if they're, assigned parking spaces if they are donors, and those are assigned by our foundation. And any information they'd like to know about where they're going to be parking, what time they can actually access the parking and start tailgating, that's all housed on our foundation's website, which is the Old Dominion Athletic Foundation, otherwise known as ODAF. And their website is olddominionaf.com. So if anybody has any questions, you can call up ODAP or look at their website.
Well, thank you. And I figure once you find that parking space, I learned something new. If you get a little bit late, if you hear that cannon, you better double step it into the stadium. You don't want to miss kickoff.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you'll hear that from any of the parking lots that we put our fans in. So no doubt. Yeah, if you hear that cannon, you might be running a little bit late if you're just packing up your tailgate. So hurry on up and get in the stadium.
Well, Jason, thank you very much for your time. Looking forward to hoping the football team keeps the wins rolling and we get that first one against Norfolk State at home for the fans.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I know our fans are looking forward to it. It's going to be a great Saturday next weekend, and it should be a great celebration, and hopefully we'll beat Norfolk State and roll on into our first big-time FBS Power 5 opponent with NC State. So great things to look forward to this season.
Well, thank you for your time, and a good luck this season.
Okay, thank you, David.
All right, well, we're almost done with the second episode of the Monarch Asylum podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it. A lot of good information out there. Let me tell you a little bit about the contest we're implementing with our first ever sponsor, Lynn Haven Coffee Roasters. They have generously donated a couple of $25 gift certificates to Lynn Haven Coffee Roasters, located at 2234 West Great Neck Road near the intersection of Shore Drive. All you have to do is tweet a picture using the hashtag Monarch Asylum of how you watch the ODU football game. You don't have to be at the stadium. You could be at home. You can be anywhere. But I need a picture tweeted of your view of the ODU football game versus Norfolk State. Now, my favorite picture, whoever I pick, will win a $25 gift certificate to Lynn Haven Coffee Roasters. You can get more information on them at lynnhavencoffee.com, or you can email mike@lynnhavencoffee.com. They are located once again at 2234 West Great Neck Road. They are only open on Saturday and Sunday from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. And they are affiliated with the Shore Drive Farmers Market. And that's where you want to go for all your coffee. I have a buddy of mine I went to Old Dominion with who works closely with them. And it is the place to go for coffee if you are a coffee drinker. All right, so what did we learn on today's podcast? Well, from our first guest, Andy Mashaw, I can expect a bit more of a focus on the running game to help break Shuler Bentley in slowly. They do trust Shuler to throw the ball, but when you can run the ball like they can with Ray Lowry, there's no need to force the issue. With Blair Roberts, I learned that the receiving core is ready to take some of the offensive load off of the running back's shoulders. Falante Mischer, I learned that he's a talker, and he needs to be with the youth that they have on defense. And finally, from Jason Chandler, I learned when you hear the howitzer blast, it's time to get your butt in the stadium and watch some ODU football. It's loud, so if you don't notice that, well, then you're not really paying attention, or maybe you should not have that extra beer. So what are we going to see against Norfolk State this weekend? Well, I think the game plan is going to have a lot more carries, a lot more running the ball, but I don't expect Lowry to touch it more than 25 times in that game. I think they want to save some juice in his legs for the NC State game coming up the following weekend. So see Jeremy Cox. Expect Jeremy Cox to have a couple more carries than he'll probably be accustomed to having. I think they want to get Shuler Bentley some more comfortable throws to get him feeling more comfortable in the offense, so possibly some more play action. But I don't expect them to show too much of their passing game. They don't want to put too much on the book for North Carolina State to look at going in the following week. I think they want North Carolina State to focus on the run. So you're going to see more of the play action game the following week. And I expect the defense to step up and play a little bit better to have that first one out of their system. Falante Mischer explained that, how some of the young guys were a little over-anxious that first game. There's something about that first game, getting it under your belt, that relaxes you a little bit. So that's what I'm expecting to see, and we'll talk about it next week on Episode 3 of the Monarch Asylum Podcast. Thanks again for tuning in. Thanks again for sharing. Once again, tweet your pictures of where you watch the ODU game, hashtag Monarch Asylum. The best picture wins a $25 gift certificate to Lynn Haven Coffee Roasters. All right, thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week.
Hey, this is Taylor Heineke, and you're listening to the Monarch Asylum. Go Big Blue.